Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. The war is back on. Well, kinda. It appears now to be a war of attrition. Trump and his supporters have never been interested in a negotiated end to the conflict. They still demand Iran surrender. This is not going to happen. Iran can say no. Cross-talking Trump's war, I'm joined by my guest, Michael Scheuer in Virginia. He's the former head of the Bin Laden issue station at the CIA. In Cornwall, we have Steve Jeremy. He is a retired Royal Navy Commodore. And in Italy, we cross to Matteo Capasso. He is a professor of Middle East studies at Northwest University in China. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Jeremy, Steve, if I could go to you first in Cornwall. I'm titling this program War Without Purpose. Is that a fair description of what's going on right now?
I think it's a semi-fair description, in as much as the purpose that Iran have is clear, but the purpose that the United States have is not clear. And when I say that, I mean I am not clear of what the United States' objectives are, or I think they're changing all the time. I think the key point is that the key thing for Iran is that if they survive and if they maintain their control of the state, Strait of Hormuz, then they win. And yet it's unclear about what the United States wants. I think originally we talked about nuclear issues, and we talked also about the destruction of the regime. It looks to me like neither are possible, and that the critical issue is now becoming the Strait of Hormuz. And it's very difficult to see how that will be achieved. But from what I can see, you're right. This is a war without purpose for the Americans, but not for the Iranians.
Yeah, but Matteo, if I can go to you in Italy, if it's about now the Strait of Hormuz, that's a lost cause already, because in the 40 days of kinetic action, presumably the United States destroyed everything that they could possibly see on the surface. So I don't understand what these strikes are all about right now. I mean, I've seen some of the footage, and I'm very skeptical of all footage I see, but sometimes it looks like they're hitting empty boxes. So, you know, what purpose is this war, the continued attacks on Iran, going to achieve? I don't see it. And as a matter of fact, it is mobilizing the world against the United States and in favor of Iran. Go ahead, Matteo.
Absolutely, absolutely. You're absolutely right on this, Peter. I mean, this is the way I see this war is that we're looking at a one tile in a larger mosaic of a world order in transition. Meaning that the impunity of the United States, of its empire, is declining. It's facing a major crisis. So, from a rational point of view, you know, any social political formation, any government that is looking at the historical moment where they are not able to govern, to control, and to impose its world vision on the rest of the world as they used to, rationally they should step back. Realize that the global south and the world majority is now rising, that the conditions are not in place anymore. But this is where the irrational part comes in. You know, the military violence, the desire to reproduce the very conditions that allowed for decades the United States to be, you know, in power, to dominate, to control and clobber the sovereignty of the countries of the global south. And this is what they're trying to do. The negotiations were exactly, they've been going exactly in the same manner. You know, they decided to go for an MOU, and then they completely backtracked. And again, they are destroying. They're trying to destroy Iran. They're trying to claim that. But the world is changing. And who's paying the price? Well, let's never forget, $113 billion for American taxpayers.
Yeah, I mean, Michael, what, you know, I know we live in the age of high tech and social media and all that, but I mean, negotiating online, as Donald Trump does, calling the Iranian leadership scum. I mean, what does he expect them to do? And why should Iran even consider ever again? And I'm not just talking about the MOU, but I'm talking about the negotiations before the 12-day war last year and then the preamble to the February 28th war. I mean, I would question the sanity of the Iranians to want to sit down with these people again. Michael.
Well, I've long questioned the sanity of the United States government, and Trump is only a more emphatic kind of leader than we've had before. You have to remember, we haven't won a war since 1945. I'm not sure we fought a war that was worth fighting since 1945. And Iran, the basic problem here is that no one ever looked at a history book, and no one ever does in our colleges. They would know the Iranians weren't going to run. They don't. They never run. Mm. And they've defeated far more serious enemies than we have over the course of 2,000 and almost 3,000 years. You're looking at an American government that displays more than usual the complete ignorance of the world that it has. There's no one who can speak to what the Iranian Iranian history is, what the characteristic of that nationality is in terms of operating under strife. It's the same problem we had in Afghanistan, the same problem we had in Iraq, the same problem we had in Vietnam. People don't like to get pushed around. And in many countries, they'll fight and die rather than surrender. And that's what we have, Peter. And no one can accept that. There's no way out of this. The second thing I would say, and probably almost as important, is we're owned by the Israelis. Congress, yeah. President, big capital, almost everything here is controlled by the Israelis. And no man has the guts to stand up and say, enough. I took this money from them. Here it is. I'm giving it back. You can do what you want to me legally, but we're not going to be the poop boys of the Israelis any longer.
Well, you know, Michael, the fact that we're saying that, and not everyone here is agreeing with you, that is a sea change. I mean, these kind of conversations would have not been public. They might have been very private, but now it's very public, and I see that sea change is positive. Steve, one of the problems that we have here, Trump and his partner Israel cannot win this war that they started. And I worry with the Saudi attack on Yemen after the funeral of the Supreme Leader that the war is going to expand. How worried about that are you?
I am concerned, Peter. What I think, though, that people have not seen, or perhaps they thought might happen and then didn't, but it will happen, is the consequences of the continued closure of the Strait of Hormuz. Yep. I've worked in the energy sector for the last 15 years. And essentially, that's a foot on the neck of the global economy.
Yep.
Now, many of us thought that the consequences would happen quickly. They haven't happened as quickly as we thought. There were a number of factors in there. The Chinese have mm-hmm. taken a lot of imports or have reduced their levels of import. There are inventories are being taken down, strategic petroleum reserves are being burned down. But the fundamental factor is that actually sooner or later, and I think it'll be sooner rather than later, we are going to start to see critical issues happening, particularly in the West. This will include the United States, Peter, who are importers of crude and heavy crudes, which they need for their refineries. I think as that starts to happen, and we see again, perhaps in August, rises in hydrocarbons prices, Brent and WTI, then I think it's going to put a lot of pressure on the White House to actually come to a conclusion which allows the Strait of Hormuz to be open. Whatever happens, the consequences will run through to the end of the year. And as far as I can see, the midterms are lost for the Americans. So I'm hoping that these factors will actually at least draw this particular part of the conflict to a closure, Peter.
Yeah, and Matteo, we have a growing season that has been that didn't happen. Okay, we have a growing season. The miracle of the green revolution in the global South, that's been interrupted. Once you start interrupting these cycles, the supply chains, it's not like you flip a switch and it's back on again. And you know, Matteo, what's really even more bizarre is that Donald Trump made that admission when he was at the G7. Matteo.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. That's right. You know, you're seeing there is one thing that is going that you cannot change already, no matter what the outcome of the war is. And you already talked about the war of attrition here, which is, in fact, it's going to be a long war. The moment you started this war, this illegal attack on Iran, the supply chain, the waterways, the infrastructural corridors, the maritime corridors, all the economic ways that used to be going through Hormuz or to the Gulf are going to change because the economy has to adapt to this existence of violence. The United States used violence and the threat of violence on most of the countries of the global south. And the idea was, we are going to hang the knife, the dagger of violence on you, precisely to make investment impossible inside your country. Why? Because nobody's going to invest when they know that the United States can attack you in any moment. The issue is now that the very same government, the United States, is using this threat against Iran, but in doing so, is actually undermining the very architecture that since 1945, the United States used to maintain its own domination worldwide, specifically in this region of West Asia and the Middle East, which is what I call the triangle. So one is the Gulf, you know, the petrodollar recycling of money. The comprador regimes installed here and there through regime change operation. And of course, the ones that you were mentioning before, which is a very key element at this point, because I keep saying this war doesn't start in February, it begins on October 7, 2023. And the third element is Israel. Yep. So these very three elements right now are being questioned and are being put on the table by the very actions of the United States. And we have to see what's going to happen. But the tensions that exist at this moment, they are only going to heighten because the United States has no way to come out of this war victorious or with a rational plan until the ruling class governing the United States remains in power.
Yeah, and another lesson, and we'll talk about it in the second part of the program, what's the value of the so-called American security umbrella? Not much right now. Gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on Trump's war. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing Trump's war. Okay, let's go back to Michael. One thing that we've learned from this war of choice that started on February 28th is that there are limits to American power. Now, I've read white papers and think tanks and all the stuff, you know, about, you know, the limits and extent of American power. But that was all kind of academic. Now it's very, very real. And as I said at the end of the first part of the program, there's going to be more and more doubts about the value of American security guarantees if you're taking missiles out of South Korea and giving them to Israel and actually depriving the Gulf monarchies of they paid enormous sums for that security, and it ended up being a paper tiger. The troops went and hid in hotels because their bases were destroyed. The limits of American power. This is the conflict where the pendulum shifts back. Go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, I think there are limits to American power, but it's also limited by the stupidity of different people. To run out of ammunition at any time. Is idiocy. There's something wrong with that system. To have 12 million men under arms in 1945 and have four-star officers, and now with less than a million under arms, we have 400 and some, is idiocy. And frankly, one of the reasons we're all worried about oil is because of the farce and the really crime of the Green Group. Who stalled and countries stopped developing offshore oil and onshore oil. And why are we short of oil? Right now, it's because of this stupid war. But in the long run, all of those laws are going to come apart because we're going to need more oil. And once that does, it's a little more secure for the world. But for anyone to have believed that America's security umbrella since Vietnam was dependable, was to go along with an agreed upon lie.
Well, a lot of people made a lot of money on it, didn't they?
Exactly. People made a ton of money. Lies were believed by people who didn't really believe them. And it's finally come home to roost. And when your military is old for the last, what is it now, 90 years, or whatever it is, it's a disaster. Why would you depend on that? I don't think Americans depend on it anymore. What they see is they see their kids getting killed in lost wars, one lasting 20 years, the other one 21 years. And again, what were the problems there? The problems in Iraq is they never read the memoirs of the British activity there. They would have found out what the war was like. It's like a bad play that just keeps getting worse.
Well, I mean, you know, let me go to Steve. Is it if you? But you still have a population that is heavily propagandized. I mean, Donald Trump apparently watches Fox News all of the time. Well, if you watch Fox News, and everything is hunky dory, okay, everything mission accomplished, and all of this. I mean, I find it just because obviously it's part of my job, and I look at how media presents things. And in the U.S., at least particularly on the Iran issue, there's a huge distortion, and I'm very pleased with in a lot of people, you know, the podcasts that are out that are doing super good. I mean, wonderful service to people, but I mean, we're given in the impression is that force is the only solution. Force is the only thing these people understand. Well, that means you're admitting that you don't know anything about negotiation, diplomacy, and the lack of recognition that your interlocutor has any kind of legitimacy, and that's where we are. So that it's even more dangerous is that segments of the population don't have any sense of reality on the ground. Steve.
Yeah, I think you're right, Peter. I mean, there are three things going on here. I think the fundamental thing is that the White House in this particular war, but also the Europeans and NATO in the Ukraine war, have failed to understand the nature of the war. What appears to me that the White House are thinking is that they're actually, this is a negotiation with weapons, whereas for Iran, it's a war for existential survival. And to think that you can negotiate with weapons is, it's so badly mistaken. These are the thinking of the great German philosopher of war, Clausewitz. Tactically, though, we've also discovered something, which is that, and I speak as an air defender here and the captain of an air defense destroyer, many years ago, which is that our air defense systems don't work. They don't work for technical reasons, and the work of Ted Postal shows that actually the intercept rates are very, very low, but they don't work for operational reasons. And the problem is that actually it has now become possible with a mixture of hypersonic missiles, ballistic missiles, all conventional, and drones to actually saturate a defender's capability. So, no, the guarantee of the Americans in the Gulf is no longer working. And I think what that means is that we must sooner or later turn back to diplomacy. I find it staggering that we can't talk to the people with whom we seek to intervene. And I think diplomacy is the answer here. It's difficult. It always is difficult when you're actually having diplomatic relationships with an entity with whom you've just been fighting, but it's an essential, the only way. Yeah, that
well, Steve, what about the proposition that, you know, and I'm actually quite partial to it. Why can't just Trump walk away?
I think he's caught. He's caught in a bind, and it's a bind of his own making, because if the advice of the Pentagon, I'm sure, and others had been taken, they'd never have started the war in the first place. Yep. I didn't think they would. So I didn't think anybody would be so strategically reckless. But the problem is that he cannot win militarily, and yet he's under huge pressure politically back in the United States. I mean, the fact is that as things get worse economically, he will be forced to walk away. If he had sense, he would walk away now. But it's not in his nature to walk away without a win. And there will be no win here. The only question is what sort of defeats that you want. And I'd much rather have a defeat which allowed me to walk away now as opposed to an economic disaster shortly.
Yeah, well, do it like the Romans. Just declare victory and go home, okay? And write your own history. That's what they did, okay? It would sting politically, obviously, but things would move on. And, you know, the price of oil would help soothe that, I would imagine. Mateo, one of the things that I don't think a lot of people have considered is that, you know, and I think we all know this, that the memorandum of understanding, the 14 points, about 99% of it was written by the Iranians, obviously, okay? And I doubt Trump even read it. He needed an off-ramp, and that's what was there. But Iran takes those 14 points very seriously, and Lebanon is very serious for them, and that's going to continue. Just because the Israelis say, oh, that's not part of this deal, well, we didn't ask the Israel. Iran is going to pursue its geopolitical interests. And most of all, it wants to keep the winnings that it already has. It's not going to abandon them on the table. And that's why I think this thing is going to be very hard moving forward and quite humiliating for the United States. Go ahead, Matteo.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. I mean, since October 7, 2023, we've seen that basically there is a unity of fronts, of regional fronts, which goes back to the so-called axis of resistance. It was from Gaza, it was from Lebanon, it was from Yemen, now it's Iran. And the United States, it was Syria, of course. The United States and Israel have entered the war as well in an existential mode, especially Israel, because we can't forget that basically a genocide took place in Gaza with the amount of killing that the entire world allowed to happen, you know, without even stopping it. They thought they were getting empowered by doing that. In fact, what happened next was they decimated the leadership of Hezbollah. They took over Syria with the jihadis. And only after Syria collapsed, then they decided to go in onto Iran. The question is that Iran now has entered an existential war. And so the ways in which the axis of resistance itself is fighting this war is flipping the cards on the table and is revealing the very tenuous nature, the fragile nature of Israel and the United States in the region and worldwide. One of the key problems is related to the MOU, but also to what you were discussing before in relation to the United States, according to me, is that Trump is caught in a bind where, you know, he came to power with America First, yep. Which largely is represented by Vice President J.D. Vance, who, not paradoxically, interestingly, has been the one pushing the diplomatic channel the most inside the United States ruling class. At the same time, though, we can never forget that a major part of the so-called global capital, global ruling class of the United States, the one that wants to impose the Trump democracy all over the world, is tightly connected to Israel. And this is, I think, where the tensions are coming through. Are coming through because on the one hand, there is a large part of the population that recognizes that this is not a U.S. war. There is no need to fight against Iran. We should actually, the Global South is now a subject of history, is not an object of history. You can just bomb and leave and do whatever you want as you did in previous decades. But, and this is the problem, in order to accept this arrangement, to accept the shifting historical conditions where China is strong, where Russia is strong, where the rest of the South can come to the table and simply desires to uphold its sovereign vision, you have to basically admit that Israel is a rogue state. And you need to close the tap on Israel.
Again, I've mentioned, let me go back to Michael because we have about a minute left in the program. That is a sea change that I never would have thought. I never could have, because, you know, I've been talking about the Greater Israel Project for 25 years on this station here, okay? And I had Professor Mirandi on 15 years ago, and now he's a superstar. For those watching this program, those of us interested in this, this is nothing new. It has been revealed to the public now, and that is a significant change. Michael, 1 minute left. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think it's very important. You know, I've lost 7 jobs over the course of the last 20 years because I'm extremely pro-Israel, or at least our relationship with the Israelis. And if anything brings that to public attention, and this is, it's well worth it. But there's violence involved in that too. Is getting out? How do you get out of it? You're going to have to be able to take the Israelis bumping off some of your officers or your leaders. It's a disastrous situation, but it's the only way out, sir. We have to stop. We have to come to the point where we can say, I don't care what goes on in the Middle East. We'll send some aid. We're not sending any more troops. In much of the rest of the world to be the same way.
Well, you know, in the last 10 seconds, gentlemen, I've long posited, and I think I'm right. I mean, if Western powers leave, Sykes-Picot and all of that finally comes to an end in the region, they will take care of it themselves. Maybe it'll be a little messy, but they will find an equilibrium. It's yep. Western imperial interference that has wrecked this. And of course, the settler colonial state of Israel didn't help. All right, gentlemen, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Cornwall, Virginia, and Italy. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.